Welcome to Career Tools. Interviewing and starting your professional life, Mark's College Talk. This is part three, our final part of this show. Here we go.
Have you heard all of the ads for our training and wished you were nearer or had more budget? There's nothing quite like the live show, but we do have all three of our conferences available as video courses. It's the same content as the conference, and it's broken up into small pieces so you can fit watching into your busy life. If you buy now, you could be an expert by the new year. Go to manager-tools.com, look for products, and scroll down until you see video course. Now we're on to our questions. So we had the preparation, we had the answering of the interviewer's questions, and now we get to ask questions, which is the exciting part, right? I get to ask what I'm in charge of.
Yes. And before we get into our specific guidance, let's debunk a common myth in interviewing today that interviewing is a two-way street. Now, actually, that's not a myth. Interviewing is a two-way street. When you're being interviewed, it's okay for you to draw conclusions and to get information that will help you understand the company you might go to work for. If you don't like any of the people that interview you, it's okay to use that to say, if they were to offer you, no, I'm sorry, I don't want to come work for you. That's normal. That's the same thing as the company interviewing you and not liking you and saying, I'm not going to make you an offer. The problem with this idea that interviewing is a two-way street is that it has morphed into interviewing is an equality fest, that interviewing is fair, meaning, and fair usually in the part of the person that has less power means I want equal power, that you're supposed to be interviewing the company as they're interviewing you. Well, there is a qualitative, quantitative orders of magnitude difference between interviewing as a two-way street and I will be interviewing you as well. You're not interviewing the company. You're certainly not interviewing a corporate recruiter when you're graduating from school. So the way we like to describe that in our interviewing series is to say there are two parts of every job search: getting offers, the first part, and taking offers, which is the second part. And you can't take an offer you don't get. What we like to say is the company has all the power and the interviewee has none. Now you might say, wait, I do. I could choose to stop interviewing with them. Yes, certainly. That's true. So you have marginally none. But put differently, your power is virtually zero until you get an offer. Once you get an offer, all the power is yours. And this is where it's a two-way street, but it's a two-way street that is time bifurcated. There's the part where you have virtually no power and the part where the company has virtually no power. But these two things do not happen simultaneously. The idea that it's a two-way street and it's fair only in the sense if you get an offer. Because if that's the case, then, as we've said before in other podcasts, the definition, conceptual definition of an offer is when control passes to the interviewee or the candidate, the offeree now. Up until then, the company gets the decision. They're in charge.
So I'm wrong. I'm not in charge of these questions. Actually, these questions are not about finding out what I want to know as the candidate. These questions are actually about continuing to impress the interviewer with my smarts.
Yeah, this is really important. This is where your questions, the interviewee's questions, tends to be an important part to putting the nail in the coffin of a lot of interviewees who believe that it's a two-way street, believe that it's a chance for them to interview the company. And so when it gets to the questions, they ask questions like, well, how many people are going to work for me? And, you know, are you guys going to be flexible on salary? And, you know, what if I don't like the first location I'm sent to as part of this big multinational corporation potentially that I'm interviewing with?
Where's my desk going to be?
Yeah. Where do I sit? How much do I get? When's lunch? When can I quit? And basically, if I had any sense when I'm interviewing you that there was some selfishness, lack of team play, lack of humility, lack of social graces. The great example would be pulling out your phone during the interview. And it happens. Guys, it happens all the time. Doesn't make you great if you don't do that. It just means you're not horrible. But there's a big gap between not horrible and great. So when that person then asks a selfish question, we go, oh, okay, you know, this person is selfish or more selfish than we care to hire. We may have misread you. I don't know, but we have to make a decision and we have various criteria and you haven't met them.
And remember, we're going to pay you to do something. It's not like you go to work and you can continue to be entirely selfish because we're paying you to give us something. That means that you have to be selfless to a certain extent. And so if you're selfish in the interview, that shows to me as an interviewer, well, I'm going to pay you, but you're not going to give me anything because everything is about you.
Yeah. So it is important that you have prepared questions. And it is important that those questions are not about the job, okay? Or they're not about what you're going to get out of the job. You're not going to ask questions about the company unless you're interviewing for a strategic position about the entire company. Asking a question about benefits. And when I say not asking about the company, I mean things like, what's the strategy or what's the history or can you tell me more about the company or those kinds of things.
It's a classic interview question. What do you do here? Reject people like you who haven't done any research.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not going to ask questions about the industry or the economy and those kinds of things. Again, unless your role, you know, if you're interviewing out of an MBA program and you're going to go into a strategic planning role, okay, fine. Then you might ask about how the real is going to affect, the exchange rate of the real is going to affect operations in that part of the world. I mean, that could happen. So you're going to have questions prepared and memorized. And those questions are going to be about your role and how you will be contributing in the role. To learn more about what the company is asking you to do, knowing full well that this may not be the most important thing to you if you get an offer, but since you don't have an offer, you're supposed to be showing the company that you've thought through in advance the kind of role they're going to have you do, and you have some questions around that. For instance, if you're going to work as a manufacturing engineer, you're not going to ask, what are the shifts at the plant? On the other hand, you might say this, and hopefully you can hear the three-parted nature of this question. I was reading about the recent implementation of robotics in your organization and also the implementation of big data. I'm wondering how I might be involved in the implementation of robotics across the organization and also how I might be involved in the capturing of data that gets used to determine more efficiencies and so on. Okay, so there's three parts to that question. You tell them where you got the question. I was reading, or I saw an article, or I heard a report of X or Y or Z, and then I have a question, which also causes the recruiter to give a chance to respond in an expansive way rather than in a shortened way. For instance, imagine you've just gone through a 40-minute interview, and the interview was very conversational. The interviewer asked you for examples of accomplishments. He asked you to spend a few minutes telling him about yourself. And then you say, where do I sit? How much do I get? How many people are going to work for me? Well, how many shifts? How many people on shift? First of all, those questions are factual. And you're probably not smart enough to know the difference between 20 people on a shift and 40 people on a shift. And a great deal of the time, asking point blank questions. Will I be doing X or Y? Will I be doing this? Yes or no? Will I be doing this? What about this? When you ask questions that I think of as being digital, on or off, or binary, let's put it that way, you put the recruiter in a situation that he didn't or she didn't put you in, which is you're asking questions that there's a right and a wrong answer to. You may not know what the right or wrong answer to. They're obligated to answer truthfully, but it will begin to feel like an inquisition. The recruiter didn't do that to you. And if we're screaming about fairness, if we're asking for a two-way street, we darn well better ask conversation generating questions in the course during our portion of the question asking session at the end.
The other lead in for them for a question is, you said earlier, so not I read or, not something that happened before the interview, but if they said something that was interesting or that you could ask more about during the interview, that shows you were paying attention and that you can go on the fly.
Yeah, I had some prepared questions, but I'm really very interested in something you said earlier. You mentioned that robotics were going to only go into two divisions, and I thought that was interesting. And we're talking about one of those divisions. What will be my role and why that decision, if I may?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's how you prepare your questions. Do not write your questions down and carry them with you into the interview and then ask to take them out. Oh, I have some prepared questions I've written about. I had a guy tell me, no, it's okay because interviewing is a two-way street and I saw that the interviewer had prepared questions. Why can't I have prepared questions? Yeah, you're confusing two-way street with it's going to be co-equal the entire time.
And it's horrifying when a candidate gets out a piece of paper and there's like 15 questions and you know you only have 10 more minutes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the questions we're going to
ask.
That's
the important part.
Right. So my favorite part of interviewing, probably I consider it to be Manager Tools and Career Tools secret sauce in interviewing because it works so well. I've been recommending it to people now for 30 years. It never fails, and that's closing the interview. The logic behind this is really simple. You can't show up to an interview if you don't have a legitimate interest in an offer from the firm that you're interviewing with. There's some assumptions there. It has to be for a role that you understand the interview to be for. It has to be within a reasonable range of salary. They can't offer you to do the job for free, and so on. If you knew that, of course, you would turn down the interview. But the point is this, showing up for an interview is an admission of interest because if you didn't have interest, you wouldn't show up. Otherwise, if not having interest, it would be a reason to show up. You're missing a lot of interviews because they're going on all the time, all over the place, and they're not interviewing you. So if you're showing up, you have interest. Okay. If you have interest in the job, you want them to make you an offer. And the reason for that is you can't make a decision yes or no unless you have an offer. Furthermore, whether you have five offers or one, you can't get five offers all at once. They are binary choices from each company. And so if your job is to make the company want to hire you so that you can have more options, you have to tell them you want an offer. And almost nobody does this. Companies absolutely love it. So after your questions, at the very end of the interview, it may have to happen a little quickly, not as you're being shoved out the door. But if, heaven forbid, the recruiter stands up and says, I'm so sorry, we got to go, you still have time very quickly to utter the seven most powerful words you can use in an interview. I want an offer. And here's why. So if Wendy were interviewing me for a position at Manager Tools, let's say as a presenter, I would say, Wendy, thanks so much for your time. And I'm so sorry, but I just want to tell you, I want an offer. And here's why. I want to affect people's management future. I want to work at a small firm. And I like the culture here that says we're all about effectiveness and efficiency while caring about one another.
And I'd say you're hired.
Yeah, one would hope. So the point of this is I'm telling them I want an offer. Now, folks, don't go crazy on me. I'm not saying I would take an offer. Okay. This is a really important point. Everybody's, oh no, I can't say that. I don't know whether I want an offer or not. It depends on whether the offer is X or Y. Dude, you don't get to determine the characteristics or components of an offer before they give it to you. An offer is, until you get it, a blind thing. So the next natural step in interviewing is to get an offer. And so that means you might as well state your interest in one. And by the way, you can say this with different reasons why in every single company you interview, because the logic is unassailable. If you're in the interview, you must want an offer. Now, look, if you have a terrible, terrible experience with a recruiter, unprofessional, unethical, rude, whatever, fine, don't say it, walk out. Feel free to walk out even earlier. Although, generally speaking, I found that young people tend to have a bad sense of whether or not what's happening to them is truly beyond the pale. I've had people say to me, you know, I'm just uncomfortable with questions. I'd like if we could just chat. And I said, well, no, I'm actually going to interview you and I'm going to ask you questions and hopefully you'll answer. Yeah, that doesn't really work for me. I said, okay, this interview's over. And then he said, oh, no, I don't want the interview to be over. Okay, well, all right. So the point of closing, guys, if you want to send a special message, and I would argue if you're interviewing with multiple companies, it doesn't hurt to send it to multiple companies because company A and company B and company C hopefully have different reasons for why you'd want to go there. Yes, they may have negatives, but every company has negatives. Every candidate has negatives. We're not highlighting negatives necessarily. We're highlighting positives. What would you rather have? 5 interviews and 5 offers? Or 5 interviews and no offers? You're not saying, I will come to work for you. You're saying, I want an offer.
Mm-hmm. I want the details in order for me to make a decision.
Exactly.
And people write to us all the time and say, I wasn't sure about doing this, but I did it and I got the offer.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I'll never not do it again.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like bungee jumping. You know, you've got to just push yourself through it.
I wouldn't have chosen that example, but okay. Have you ever bungee jumped?
Hell no.
Well, then why would you use that as an example?
Because it's one of the things you have to force yourself to do, and I'm still not there.
Oh, I see. Okay. But then you're implying that once somebody does bungee jump once, they would never stop doing it.
In my experience, people that do it once do it multiple times because they've established they're crazy.
I see. Folks, just disregard Wendy's comparison of crazy behavior to closing an interview. Probably yes. Not the most helpful moment in the history of career tools. Okay. Anyway, Let's move on. So we've closed. Interview's over. What do you do after the fact? Well, what you do is follow up. The first thing you do is write a thank you note. It's handwritten. It goes in the postal service. You write it within 24 hours. The beauty of them giving you a business card, which many recruiters do, is frankly, if they give you a business card, they're hoping you will write them a thank you note. Now, many of you say, well, that's not good enough email. You know, it'll take a week or they're never in their home office or whatever. We cannot tell you the number of times that the small thing of a thank you note was the one thing that tipped the scales with a company that caused them to choose A over B. And A is the candidate that wrote the thank you note. Now you may say, oh, it's just a small thing. Folks, interviewing is about thousands of small things. It's about your smile. It's about your handshake. It's about your detailed answers to certain questions. I could interview 20 people and all of them have things to offer. But one of them had 2 answers that were particularly good. They don't know that I thought they were particularly good. Most people couldn't tell those answers from any other answer, but for me, they resonated based on what I know about the job, what I know about the company, what I know about where the company is going. Everybody else gave good answers or marginally good, the people I'm still interested in, 20 out of 100 that I interviewed. So this game is not won by one massive bet. It's won by hundreds of small bits of behavior. That's why we had you do so much preparation. So you write a thank you note. And then it's totally okay to call as well. If you have a phone number, call, leave a voicemail. And all you're going to do is close again. What you don't do is call and complain that you haven't heard. Unfortunately, one of the many unappealing things about interviewing today, about recruiting, about hiring, is the, I will call it cowardice, but more generally, the lack of professional follow-through on the part of companies that the only person who ever gets a follow-up, if there is any at all, is the person who gets an offer. And no one else hears anything. And it's stupid and it's wrong, and we wish it didn't happen, but it does. That said, don't let that get to you. Don't make it a negative between you and the company. Just call and say, hey, and if it's a voicemail, it'll be, hey, Wendy, I just want to tell you, I still want an offer. I know you're busy, so I'll just be brief. A couple of things I really like are this and this, and you can reach me at this number. Thanks so much. You're positive. And if it's been 2 months and you think, gosh, there's just no chance, you could say, hey, Wendy, one more time, just call and really want an offer for all the reasons I said before. And I totally understand if you've gone another direction, and I hope whoever you hired turns out good for you. I want that to be a good situation. And if you give me a call back, I'd appreciate it. You can reach me at this number.
And the other thing to remember is there's a lot of stuff that happens between an interview and an offer going out. There's all sorts of communication. Ugh. So it does take longer than you think it's going to take. It takes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, sometimes more to actually get an offer out the door when you're a recruiter. So hearing nothing may be a silent rejection, but it also may be there's still stuff happening. So you've got to kind of hang in there until you hear that it's not happening, or, you know, you get to that point 2 months in or 3 months in where you say, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to contact you anymore. I just want you to know, you know, I'm still really interested. And the other thing about saying I'm still really interested is the next time that job comes up, the recruiter has you in mind already.
Ooh, good.
A friend of mine, I joined a team and about, I don't know, 6 months later, we needed someone else. And we took somebody else on, and she had interviewed in the same round of interviews that I had interviewed in. And she was their second choice, and she told them how much she wanted to work there. And so as soon as we wanted someone else, she was the first person they called.
That's very reminiscent of a part that's a chapter in my latest book, The Effective Hiring Manager, where we tell hiring managers, recruiters, managers who are trying to hire people, young and old, how to deal with two viable candidates. In fact, I think we have a podcast called Two Viable Candidates, where we say, look, if the first criteria is we don't rank candidates, we compare each candidate to a standard, and we ask that asked about that person, can they do the job? And if the answer is yes, then okay, maybe they get an offer. On the other hand, if we're interviewing five people in the course of 7 days, we don't make any offers, unless somebody completely blows us away. We don't make any offers until we've seen all seven and or all five. After we've seen all five, we ask, okay, and we've talked about each one. If there are two that are left, now we're doing a comparison, but just to decide who gets hired first. But we offer person A, and we give them a somewhat shortened deadline, and we communicate with person B, hey, we're still working on this. We'll try to get back to you. The chances that A and B are close friends and A is going to call B is very small. And if that were to be the case, then if I knew A and B knew each other well, I'd probably call B immediately after and say, look, we offered A. And they may not accept. And I want to tell you, you were awesome. And I don't want you to think yourself a second choice. I know that would be a logical thing, but I want you to know if A turns us down, we're going to give the offer to you. That's how I would handle it. So it takes time. Don't assume that the delay is a slap in your face. There's admin, there's logistics, there's missed phone calls, there's people on vacation.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It's a great opportunity to start your organization or team off with a successful 2020 by scheduling training for Q1 now. We're actively booking January through April for client on-site training, and we'll come to your organization with any of our standard days of training, effective manager, effective communicator, or effective hiring manager, and work with up to 30 folks for a flat $15,000 investment. Contact Maggie by emailing maggie@manager-tools.com or go to our website by putting in #organizations in the search bar for more detail. We hope to get the privilege of working with you in 2020.
Okay. We've gone on forever and ever and ever about interviewing at a very high level. And of course, folks, there's much more. Our interviewing series is probably our most popular product because I think there are 50 podcasts in it or more, and it's only $150. I recommend you go to the website and look up the interviewing series to see all the casts. Let's switch now, and let's talk about the second part. It's a shorter part, but the second part of my talk for undergraduates, particularly, called Starting a Professional Life. And I basically have three areas I want to touch on. Things you can do while you're still in school. Things we recommend for starting a career, although certainly this is such a high level, it's almost a joke compared to the details you can get in Career Tools Cast. And then lastly, some guidance I would have as being somebody who's a dinosaur to you young college graduates today about forging a life, what I've learned in my career about the things that will make you successful through the ups and downs and vagaries of life. Because as much as we want interviewing to be fair, interviewing wouldn't be very effective if it wasn't a good distillation of life, and life is decidedly unfair. It is the nature of the universe. Okay, so what can we do while we're still in school? The first thing is recognize that these relationships you're creating now, your friends, your associates, your fraternity and sorority mates, your club mates, your classmates, your roommates, your teammates, this is a hugely important part of your life. And these are very important relationships. And I promise you, the moment you leave school, most of them will start dying, meaning the relationship, not the people. So you need a system for staying in touch with people. And I don't mean Facebook, and I don't mean Instagram, and that's probably dated this podcast, but you need to have an active way to stay in touch with people. And so we recommend some sort of software that allow you to do that. We try to stay away from specific software mentions. But the example I use from 30 years ago when computers first started make a difference professionally is Microsoft Outlook and the use of Control-Shift-K, which creates a task, and then Control-G, which creates a recurring task. And it's as mundane and pedestrian as saying, stay in touch with Wendy Lord. And that recurring every 4 months, if in fact we weren't working together. She probably wishes I didn't stay in touch with her as much as I do. Hey, where are we on this? What about this? What's the status on this? Why haven't you done this? So start creating lasting relationships. And as a general rule, we want you, and this echoes our guidance about the most important Career Tools Cast we've ever done called Building a Network. It's not networking, folks. It's building a network. And that is build your network of friends, your society of friends, if you will, democratically. Do not think that your job is to get the right people in your Rolodex. That will cause you to treat people differentially based on your interest in them. That will come later. Your friends will naturally bubble to the top. But be very careful of dismissing the janitor in favor of the CEO. Not because the CEO can actually do something for you and the janitor can't, but because you don't want to be an ass. And as a general rule, the nicer person you are, the more likely you are to get ahead. We disagree with Leo DeRocher, who said nice guys finish last. Okay, next, after starting those relationships and remembering that you're going to maintain them going forward, the second most important thing you can do is read. And I've talked to a lot of young graduates who say, the first thing I want to do when I graduate is stop reading. The reason you say that, though, is because you've been reading textbooks, and textbooks are terrible. You need to start the process of reading as part of your professional and personal development for the rest of your life. It is the most powerful, flexible, inexpensive tool you will ever have. Video is not the answer. Do not get your news from Twitter. You need to read a paper, and you need to read books. And books are available digitally now. If you like the feel of a book in your hand, that's good. But they're probably expensive. And I think now there's all kinds of software where you can get unlimited books through various retailers, digitally delivered.
And you can get I think it's called Overdrive, but it works with public libraries. So you can get ebooks from your public library, so you don't have to pay for them.
Yeah, good.
And the other thing about reading is it's a habit, and it's also a skill, not the actual like knowing words, that's a skill too, but the skill of being able to sit there and read 20 pages and take them in and remember them is a skill that you have when you're at university. And if you have a break of a couple of years, it's really hard to get back into that skill or to rework that skill. So Don't have a dip and lose it. Keep it going.
Young people today are less busy. I'm sure you feel busy. That's probably because you spend a lot of time on your phone, and I respect that. But I'm nearly 60 years old. I read the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times every morning. Why? Because they're the papers of record for the world, at least in my part of the world here in the United States. I read 200 business books. I read 200 books a year, the majority of which are business books. I should have had my iPad out and gone through quickly the books that I'm reading right now. I have books that I need to read for work to stay current, but I also have books that I read for fun. I think last year I finished the fantastic biography of Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. I just finished another one of Churchill's books. I like reading Churchill, and I like reading about Churchill. So read, 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 read. Next, don't choose a job based on money. That's not to say follow your passion, because that's really bad advice, and we have a podcast about how bad the advice is. But if there's a difference of $2,000 between two different jobs, choose the job you think you'll like more. And if you have a chance, also pay attention to who the boss is. You're going to make plenty of money. Money is not the problem. How much money you make will not be the problem. How much money you spend will be the problem. So take the job you like more. It will cause you to put more into it, and then just curtail your spending habits. And then lastly, I just want to suggest that it sounds very old-fashioned, but the world has gotten in a terrible hurry these days, to quote Shawshank Redemption, and it would be good to start minding your manners. To be a professional in today's world does not mean ignoring other people for your fear of missing out of what's on your phone or your tablet. Learn how to introduce yourself to other people. It will distinguish you from other young people. Learn how to have a conversation. And by the way, we have podcasts for both those things. And if you don't realize it yet, all the podcasts are free. Learn how to eat a meal with other people. Not the way you do with your family, where there are unwritten rules, but how you do so in public. Learn how to manage your relationship with your technology. And that's not hard to find good guidance on that. And learn how to pay attention to other people's names. And we have podcasts on that as well. Those are some things to help you with your transition. What about starting your career? Okay, well, it is about relationships. Take it from an engineer who doesn't really like people. That's me.
I'm not an engineer and I don't like people.
Horseman's first law, it's all about people. That's what I've learned in my professional life. So we want you to not only maintain your relationships from school, but create new relationships. And if that's not a person you run into every day or every week at work, set a standard that you're reaching out to them on a regular basis to maintain that relationship. I promise you, when you get laid off, when you get fired, when your boss becomes irrational and does stupid things or puts you in a difficult situation, or they ask you to move somewhere you can't move because of your spouse or your kids or your mom or your dad or your in-laws or your grandparents or whatever, when you need to make a transition from one job to another, you do not want the asks you're making of people about helping you with your resume, helping you get an interview, to be the first call you've made to them in 2 or 3 years. That's called a cold call for a reason, because it leaves people feeling cold.
I just had a thought. I should have said this earlier, but one of the people that people don't think about making a relationship with, which is so valuable, is receptionists. Receptionists know everything and everyone and where they are and what they're doing and what kind of mood they're in. And people kind of dismiss receptionists. And yet, if you're friends with them, you can get all sorts of information.
Yeah. But they're just one of many, right?
Oh, yeah.
Let's not see it that way. Let's be power blind. Let's call it power blind. I don't care whether she or he has power or not. They're a human soul. They're worthy of your respect and honor. Okay, now that you've graduated, forget about school, okay?
No one cares. No one cares where you went.
Forget about grad school, okay? There's a great story by a guy I like reading in Wall Street Journal, Andy Kessler, who's a very successful former banker and venture capitalist and so on, now a writer. And he tells the story of going to a reunion at his former investment bank, and a guy comes up and says, when did you graduate? And Andy says, what? When did you graduate? I don't understand. From From where? From HBS, meaning Harvard Business School, the implication being that the only way you get into this part of the job at Morgan Stanley or wherever it was to have graduated from Harvard Business School. And Andy said, I didn't go there. He may have gone to Villanova or something. I can't remember. Or Vanderbilt. Regardless, it doesn't matter. Okay. Your GPA doesn't matter. Okay. If you start making a big deal about where you went to school, people are going to say, you're like the person that says my greatest year of my life was my senior year in high school. Okay. Next, turn off the TV. There is almost nothing redeeming about TV today. In fact, I was watching with my wife the other night, and the word that popped into my head after watching two incredibly popular TV shows was self-absorbed. Everyone on the shows are self-absorbed. And by the way, that will free you up to do work at night, or more importantly, to be with your family and to read more. Just the idea of flipping channels ought to cause people concern who complain they don't have enough time to get everything done. When it comes to work, show up early, stay late, be quiet, work hard. But when I say stay late, I don't mean at the expense of your family. I just mean work hard while you're there. Serve other people. Get out of your own head and think about other people. Figure out what they need and give it to them. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Okay, I don't know why. Somehow people think, well, I don't want to ask a question because then I will show myself to not know that thing, whereas if I don't say anything, I can pretend to know it. Hey, young person, we know you don't know anything. We respect the people who ask because they're being selfless and not selfish. Keep your resume current. Don't get caught flat-footed with a resume that you have to scramble to put together. And there's a podcast about the career management document that will tell you how to do that every 90 days. We talked about etiquette. Put on top of etiquette the ability to become a genuinely nice person, to think of other people, to ask after them, to show up at difficult times of their life. Sometimes showing up at someone's house doesn't require you to say anything. Do favors for people and expect less favors in return. And something else I talked about, not choosing a job based on money. Save 10, 20, 30, 40% of your salary. Live in a small house. Eat at home. Prepare your own food. Don't have a 7-year car note. If you can avoid having a car, don't have a car. Pay off all your debts.
Just look at any of the tables about compound interest and see the difference between what happens if you start saving at 20 and what happens if you start saving at 50, and feel the depression that you will feel if you haven't saved and you're starting at 50 and you have to put in 10 times as much to catch up.
Yeah, and you know, there's a theme, there's a movement in the world right now. In the US it's called FIRE. Financial independence, retire early. Now, these people take saving to the extreme, and they are saving 60 to 70% of their income and investing it, and they're able to retire when they're 40. It can be done. Do not rely on the government. Do not rely on your company's pension. Take care of your own retirement, and all that other stuff will be gravy. And I happen to not like the FIRE thing, not because I'm not in favor of people having independence and choosing. I love the fact they get to choose. And if they want to live that way, live that way. I think that's great. My concern, of course, is if when somebody retires at 40, we lose many of their productive years, and productivity matters to the human condition. And I wouldn't want people to be half-stepping it between the ages of 40 and 60 when you're old enough to have some experience, but still spry enough to have some good ideas.
And we have a product for this as well. First Job Fundamentals is just for people coming out of university and starting their first jobs.
Yes, good. Okay. Lastly, some big picture things about forging a life for yourself. We all get so busy, we forget that family comes first. If you want your family to come first, then you don't have to ask the question about work-family balance, because work and family shouldn't be in balance. Family should take precedence. So put your family on your calendar. There should be one day a week, and we have podcasts about this, calendar podcasts. There should be one day a week where you go home at a certain time so that everybody gets to eat together. Now, you may have been raised in a background where eating together wasn't important, but I encourage you, if you haven't done so, to try it, because those are the ties that bind. And now, later in your career, not only have you created relationships and you've maintained those relationships, now it's your turn to share those relationships with other people who might could benefit from them. And then those people will extend your relationships and your network as well. It would be silly of us not to mention that while the popularity of life, the things that are exciting and cool and interesting, like movies and beaches and clothes and cars and all that sort of stuff, all that stuff will pass. When you get to our age, my age, you'll realize none of that stuff was very important. And it's pretty obvious today, in the world today, in 2019, that management is thought of as boring and unsexy and unpretty, and management is sort of what drones do. But unfortunately, it's the plumbing that keeps large organizations running, and it would be good for you to know how to be a good manager. We also want you to be an inspirational leader. We like both. But don't think you can leap from college kid to inspirational leader and then not pay attention to management and be successful, because at some point, the foundation lacking, the house you're building will crumble. So we offer you manager tools for free to learn how to do that. And last thing, I will tell you something that once a month I struggle with, because I just want to tell people how I really feel. But the world is a busy place and getting busier. And it would be good if we were all nice to one another. Try to set a genuinely nice example. As a friend of mine once said, and it's a statement I love, when you die, do so having lived a life so that even the undertaker will be saddened.
The other one that you say often is be nice on the way up because you'll meet everybody on the way down.
Yes. Be smile at people on your way up because you will see them on the way back down. Yes. And that's our guidance.
Wow. That was a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I talk. It's like I get paid to talk.
Yeah, but it's all the important stuff that we want people to know that I wish I had known at 21.
Oh my gosh, had I known this stuff.
Don't fall in the holes that we did.
Yep. That's why podcasts, career tools, and manager tools are here, so that you can learn from us. That's it, folks. A departure from the norm. We thought we'd do something different. My talk is fairly popular, and we thought we'd share it with you. Thank you.